is the Tony D Show, brought to you by Quicken Loans. Take advantage of historic low rates. Go to Rocket Mortgage today.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
Follow Tony on Twitter at Tony D Radio.
Guys, I'm bringing the party to you.
From the Quicken Loan Studios in New Jersey, here's your host, Tony DeZiri.
I'm glad you're with us here on SB Nation Radio. It is hour number two. I am Tony D, 800-777-2907. Bottom of the hour, Jeremy Wu is going to join us. We'll talk some NBA. Well, they also have our top five, bottom five from the NBA that I forgot to do yesterday. We normally do it on Tuesdays, but I got so lost in a time warp with the hurricane snowstorm that was supposed to bury us in the snowpocalypse that never really quite materialized. Before I get to this next topic, can I make a gripe, Joe George? Can I just make a social media gripe?
Yes, you can.
All right.
It is your show.
I live in the Northeast. I grew up in the Northeast. I grew up in a time where, you know, fall were cool weathers and hoodies and leaf changing. And then around November, it would start to get cold and the snow would come in December and we'd get these storms and you'd have to shovel yourself out. And then spring would come and summer and all that. Four seasons. All right. I get it. I don't need reminders on Facebook from people who live in warm weather climates that it's 75 degrees where you live, where it's 90 degrees where you live, where the sun is shining where you live. I get it. I know that Florida is hot. It's hot almost all the time. I didn't expect people in Florida to go, woke up to 4 inches of snow outside my patio. I expect that in March, because, I don't know, they're playing baseball there, that I expect green grass and sunshine. I get it. You have high temperatures. I get it. You live in the desert out in Phoenix. It's supposed to be 90. I get it. You live in Las Vegas. It's supposed to be 85. I get it. There's no need to remind me that you live in a warm weather climate. I know you live in a warm weather climate. I don't. By the way, I also grew up in an area where when we would get 3, 4, 5, 6 inches of snow, people lost their minds. They were so excited because that meant skiing. That meant better skiing. That meant going, getting, having the day off to go skiing. They loved it, or snowboarding, or whatever it is they do. So there is a segment of the population that you don't have to be sympathetic towards when it comes to Snowmageddon, because a lot of people love to strap on the skis or the sleds or go out and make a snow fort or just enjoy winter when it is. Yeah, there are some people that'll complain and gripe because they've got to shovel the stuff and it's cold and it's not nice. But if you live in Florida, we know you live in warm weather. Same with Arizona and Nevada. You're just bragging at that point. All right. So that's my gripe.
It's okay, Tony. I understand.
All right.
Because I used to be on the other side of that, too, with the snow. I definitely was that person when I first moved to Houston because I wanted to, like, laugh at my parents.
Yeah, of course.
But I'm over it now. But yeah. I'm done with it now.
Yeah. It's like, all right, that's cool. Look, hey, in July, I'm not going to brag about how it's 75 or 80 degrees, or June, 75 and 80 degrees, and it's a 638 degrees with 100% humidity where you live. I'll make that trade-off with you. Or I won't tell you how I don't have a lot of bugs in my house and you have bugs all over the place down in these particular areas. How's that? Every place in America has their great moments and their horrible moments when it comes to weather. Every place in America, except for maybe Southern California, has its time where you don't want to be here in July, or you don't want to be here in September, or you don't want to be here in January, or you don't want to be here in December. Every place has that. Except for Southern California, which is I don't remember them having an awful weather day. When I was in San Diego in 2008 in July, it was the most comfortable time I've ever had being in July, ever. It was this cool breeze coming in off the ocean. It was like 77 degrees. It was the middle of July. I loved it. So that's about the only place in America where it's truly paradise. No, you don't live in paradise if in July it's 7,282 degrees with the humidity like soup. No, that's not paradise. Paradise is 75 all the time. I think San Diego is about the only place where that exists. Okay, so this is a story I did not see in person. I actually saw this more or less on Twitter. So, Joe, I will ask you if you've seen this, but I do have an overriding conversation about it. Apparently, Terrell Owens went on the Undisputed show on Fox wearing a mock Hall of Fame jacket, complaining again that he didn't get into the Hall of Fame. All right. Now, Twitter blew up on this, which is the way it should be. I didn't see it, so I can't make comments on the actual show, but I can make a comment on the overall feeling of Terrell Owens complaining about not getting into the Hall of Fame. There are two thoughts on this. One, is he hurting his chances of getting in the Hall of Fame? Two, should he be doing this even if he wasn't hurting his case for the Hall of Fame? Now, I'll start with number one. Is he hurting his chances to getting in the Hall of Fame? My problem with that question is that implies that voters who vote for the Hall of Fame use these things as a barometer as to getting into the Hall of Fame. If you have a certain amount of numbers that are not going to change, meaning he is ranked this, he's got this many yards, he's got this many touchdowns, that doesn't matter. That, for any player, that stays static because he doesn't play any more games. That stays permanent. Are you moving the barometer based on your emotional feelings to what he is saying or doing? And if it is, give away your vote. If you were on the Terrell Owens side, and then this morning you happened to catch clips of this show or watch the show and saw him wearing a mock Hall of Fame gold jacket, if you change your opinion about his playing status, his Hall of Fame worthy numbers, you got to give away your vote, because your personal feelings towards Terrell Owens should not be included in you voting for him. You have to have your own standard. Now, I know the standards tend to be different between Hall of Fame voters, but if you said, I support T.O. in the Hall of Fame, I voted for T.O. in the Hall of Fame, he just didn't get enough, and I will go to bat for him in future meetings, and today you say, no, I don't like his complaining, and I don't like his mocking, then guess what? You need to get rid of your vote, because that shouldn't be a factor. The fact that people are talking about this in these terms is troubling to me. You can't have a voting process where reaction to the media, reaction to this, not being able to take this well or that well, or do you can't have that in a Hall of Fame vote, because all of these guys eventually come up short in some capacity. You can go through the whole list of Hall of Fame inductees, and I'm sure there are a few people that will say, well, I didn't like what he said this time when he was a second-year player, or I didn't like the way he talked about this when he was 2 years out of retirement. This becomes a situation where, in the end, if it's all about my personal feelings towards somebody and not about something that is permanent, meaning I feel he should be in the Hall of Fame because he's got X, Y, and Z numbers, then we've got a voting problem. Two, should Terrell Owens be doing this? Should he be campaigning like this? Should he be wearing a mock jacket? I would advise him not to, because I can't guarantee that the situation I want in question number one actually exists. If I was advising Terrell Owens, I would say, you need to stay away from that stuff. Because, T.O., you and I want a world where your numbers stand on its own. And your numbers are the only telltale sign of getting into the Hall of Fame. Your contributions on the field, in the game, to the teams that you played for, those are the things that matter the most. Those are the things that should matter the most. But I can't guarantee that. Because there are 48 voters who vote on this process, and I can't guarantee that every single one of them are going to follow my criteria of keep your personal opinions about a guy to yourself and vote what you know on the field. Because in those 48 guys that vote, I bet you a bunch of them have put in their own personal like or dislike for a candidate on the table at some point, influenced them in some way. Maybe they still voted for a guy reluctantly. Maybe they didn't vote for a guy because they didn't like him personally. Maybe they overblew certain aspects of that person's personality to keep them out of the Hall of Fame. I can't guarantee that. So if I was advising T.O., I would say, no, don't go on a television show wearing a mock Hall of Fame jacket with your stats on the back of it. Don't do that. It doesn't make your case, because what we don't like in America is those who whine and cry and demand their way. We like guys to be above it all a little bit, to say, you know, I'm very disappointed I didn't make the Hall of Fame. I feel like I have the numbers to make the Hall of Fame. I really feel like I contributed and I did this and I did that and I'm disappointed and I'll just wait it out next year. And do the candidacy the right way. If you stay a little humble, you'll be surprised how many people will come to your defense. Floyd Little, for example, Denver Broncos running back from back in the day, is in the Hall of Fame. And he would get turned down, and there were people who didn't understand his case. There were people who didn't understand his contributions and what he meant for the time that he played. And there was one guy who made it his personal campaign to get Floyd Little in the Hall of Fame. And he had to do it by laying out the case. He had to go to the voters and say, check out these numbers. And check out these numbers, what they meant for at the time he was playing. And Floyd Little got in. T.O., people will do this for you. Your numbers and your contributions are too good. People will do this for you. But I would advise you not to go over the top wearing mock jackets with your numbers on them, going on every show that will have you to complain about not getting in. Because again, I can't guarantee that it doesn't matter, because it might matter. Tony D, SB Nation Radio.
Yo, this is Paul George. You're listening to SB Nation.
Get all of your NBA coverage right here on SB Nation Radio. And for coverage of your favorite NBA team, check out our friends at SBNation.com/NBA.
What's going on? It's DeMar DeRozan from the Toronto Raptors. You are listening to SB Nation.
It's time for the top five and bottom five NBA teams right here on the Tony D Show.
All right, so this is where we do top five, bottom five on the NBA. All right, so we start with the bottom first, and you know what? This team has resided in the cellar, I think, since day one that we started doing this. Did we ever break off and put Brooklyn somewhere else other than 30 on our list?
No, because we didn't start it at the beginning of the season, which is like the only time you could even think of not putting them there.
Yeah.
So they've been at third the whole time.
They have been third the whole time. They have the worst record in the NBA. And as I mentioned at the top of last hour, they were chanting MVP to Russell Westbrook last night when he was on the floor.
Trying to convince him to come to Brooklyn.
Good for Brooklyn Net fans for recognizing that you go to games for the opponent, not necessarily for the crap product that you're getting on a nightly basis at the Barclays Center. All right, number 29 on my list belongs to the LA Lakers because they're just as bad. I decided to go back in their like schedule list to see how many they've lost in a row. And, you know, they've lost 12 of the last 13. And then I looked and I saw a whole bunch of L's and I got too lazy to count. Let's just say it's a lot of losses with just one win against Phoenix in the middle of it. So the Lakers, I can guess, are awful. So
yeah,
I'm going to put them
like,
as awful.
Like two or three games in a row where they allowed like 93 points in three quarters. That's incredible. That's incredible. So at 29, I have the New York Knicks just because I implemented the rule last week that if you lose to the Brooklyn Nets, you're automatically 29.
So
right now the New York Knicks are 29. Even though I wanted to put the Lakers there, I set a rule. I got to follow it. The Knicks are 29.
By the way, we can say the Lakers are now officially tanking, right? Timothy Mozgov and Luol Deng, they're shutting them down, right?
Yeah, they're healthy and they're not playing.
They're healthy and they're not playing. And so there's an official tank situation going on with the Lakers, which they've now just admitted to. It's one thing to put out your best and lose. It's another to go, best. I mean, really. Number 28 on my list. I don't know why, because I don't know why I put them here. I should ignore them because I don't know much about them. I put Orlando there. They've lost three in a row, five of their last six. Elfrid Payton, though, has three triple-doubles in the last five games. That's pretty good. But I just put the Magic there because, I don't know, I just don't like Orlando.
Yeah, he's an exciting player, but they're not good.
That's it. That's all they have. But you don't buy tickets to watch triple-doubles, do you?
I mean, I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
All right, 28, I got the Lakers because of, you know, the two or three games in a row that they allowed all those points. They're not getting any better. I don't like that they're full-out tanking now. And you know what? They're going to bench Mozgov for the rest of the season. Well, you got him for like three more years for another like $22 million or like $40 million because you signed this massive, awful contract. So they're 28.
All right, so number 27 on my list are the Sacramento Kings at 26-41. They've lost eight of their last nine, but they are coming off a win against the Magic. So I decided if I'm going to flip-flop them, if you lose to the Magic, you get a little bump. But the Sacramento Kings are awful. But you know what? They wanted to be awful, so they are awful.
Yeah, I got the Kings at 27 as well, 2-8 in their last 10. They're doing what they want. They're tanking as well. They're making sure that they've secured their first-round draft pick. Because if it falls outside the top 10, it goes to the Bulls.
That's right.
So sadly for the Bulls, they're not going to get it, but the Kings are happy. But they're at 27.
Maybe I should keep them out of my bottom five and just say, since they're doing exactly what they want, I can't penalize them.
But then we have to follow that for the Lakers, too, and I don't want to do that.
Oh, and another turnover for the Kings. How many is that, Joe? 65? Oh, my goodness. Something just doesn't seem right tonight. They'll be at Phoenix tonight. Number 26 is Philadelphia. Although Philadelphia came within 2 points of beating Golden State, but Philadelphia's got nobody now. Nothing. And yet, they almost pulled this off in Oakland.
So, yeah, that was a great game last night.
It was a good game last night.
I was, like, mind-blown what was going on. I was watching it. I didn't understand how or what was going on. It was very confusing. At 26, I got the Suns. I think they're still in my bottom five. But I like Devin Booker a lot. He hit the game-winning shot just recently. He's a very good basketball player. But they're still at the bottom. They're the second to last worst team in the West. So I still got them at 26.
All right, so there you go. That's our bottom five around the NBA. And now let's go to the top five. And boy, I shook this up. Number five on my list, I have the Golden State Warriors. Because the Golden State Warriors are not good without Kevin Durant. Now, they will be good when they get Kevin Durant, but right now they're not. They're not a good basketball team at all. However, and here's the however caveat that I like to throw in, as we talked about on Monday as to the why we rested our players on Saturday night and the loss to the Spurs, the NBA did them no favors with their massive travel schedule. But they have lost five of their last eight, 2-point win last night at home against a bad Philadelphia team. This is a basketball team that hasn't found its identity under Kevin Durant, but nevertheless, this is real. They blew the lead in the Western Conference. They only have a half-game lead over San Antonio. They're going to lose that quickly. And so Golden State, I'm plummeting them down a little bit to five.
So I got Cleveland at five right now, and I had them – so I dropped – I didn't have them – I had them at four last week. So I put them down to five, 4-6 in the last 10. They're getting Kevin Love back now. And they got – but they brought in Larry Sanders, which I like a lot. But they're just not playing good basketball together in a lot of ways. They had a great win last night, a dominating win, but they're just not what I want them to be. So I got the Cavs at five right now.
Yeah, and I have the Washington Wizards at four, but I almost had them up at three. I put the Wizards at four. I think the Wizards are on an uptick. I like the way they play at home. I like the way they play, period. I think the Wizards, more or less now than Boston, as the threat in the East, the Wizards have won five of their last six, just lost to Minnesota. They'll play Dallas coming up tonight. The Wizards lead their division by 4.5 over Atlanta. They're one of the top teams in the East, and I put them at four. Not quite ahead of Cleveland, but it's very, very close.
I got the Warriors at four. Steph shooting 34%. Like you said, they're 5-5 in their last 10. They're really struggling without Durant. I don't like the way their strategy of sitting their guys when they could have taken advantage of San Antonio. They didn't do so. They got smoked in the game. So I got the Warriors at four right now.
Everything you said about Cleveland is why I have them at three. They have lost a number of games. They're getting Kevin Love back. However, some of these losses that they've had were not because, you know, they rested some guys in their first game against the Heat, but some of their losses are occurring with LeBron on the court for 38 minutes. So getting Kevin Love back is going to be a help, but they have a stretch of games where they've lost four out of their last six. They did lose to the Celtics a couple of weeks ago, but that was one of those good losses because Deron Williams was on the team and they found what they could do with him. But two losses to Miami, although be it the Stars rested in one of those games, a loss to the Rockets, which I thought was if there are games during the regular season that you want to play well in, that you want to showcase something, I thought that game would be one of them. They didn't. But they did have a dominating win against Detroit, a really dominating win against Detroit. But the Cavaliers, I'm going to dip them down a little bit to three.
I got the Wizards at three right now. I understand that five of their last five wins are against non-playoff teams, but I just love the way they're playing basketball right now. And I know they lost to the Timberwolves recently, but I like what they're doing so much, and I'm still going to give them credit for back-to-back games, beating the Warriors at home and then going to Toronto and winning that game. So I got the Wizards at three right now. I just love the way they're playing basketball.
All right, number two, I put the Houston Rockets at number two. They just come off a win against the Cleveland Cavaliers. We talked about this last week. Their loss to San Antonio was only a 2-point loss on the road in San Antonio. So I thought there was some credit there. This team plays with, you know, incredible high offensive energy and whatnot. James Harden is playing at an MVP level. I think the Cavs win was a big deal. So Houston has got a bullet for me. They are number two.
Yeah, I got the Rockets at two again, like I had them last week. I love the way they're playing. I love everything about the construction of this team. And I don't know how well it'll actually work in the playoffs. I'm still not totally convinced, but I just love what they're doing. And they've got some big wins and some close games that they could have won. They're right there to me. I just love everything that the Rockets are about right now.
Yeah, one of the scary things about teams like this that score a lot of points but give up a lot of points is that, you know, when you give up a lot of points, you have to score a lot of points. And Sometimes in the postseason, you don't. And then it's an easy it's an easy win for the opponent if you're just allowing them to score and you're hoping to just score more. Like we'll just go back and forth until... If you don't crack down a little on defense in the playoffs, this is where you get bogged down. Nevertheless, I like what they're doing. Number one, San Antonio.
Absolutely.
I mean, just shouldn't be under the radar as much as they are, but they are fantastic as always. All right, coming up next, we'll talk NBA with Jeremy. We'll get his thoughts on some of the things going around the association next, SB Nation Radio.
I'm Marino, and you're listening to SB Nation Radio.
Give your opinion on the latest and most important topics going on in the world of sports by following us on Twitter at SB Nation Radio. Tweet us your reactions to the biggest moments in sports or join us on air by calling into our shows at any time at 1-800-777-2907. You're listening to SB Nation Radio. This is the Tony D Show.
All right, let's go around the NBA news and notes from the association. Jeremy Wu joins us, SI.com, to give his take on some of the teams that we're talking about in top five, bottom five. How are you, Jeremy?
Hey, man. Doing good as always.
All right, let me ask you what happened on Saturday when Golden State decided four of our stars are not going to play in a nationally televised, massively hyped game. One, did the NBA have a comment on this? And I know the NBA can't dictate to teams, play guys because we say so, but is there any way that the NBA cannot let this happen? Because they do have a good partnership with television, and I'm sure this was a bad look.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, and you know, this is just my theory, but I think their decision to do that, it was partially, I mean, I believe it was they were playing something like 5 games in 8 days or something.
Yeah.
Which is a lot for any team, right? And I don't know the travel specifics of it. I haven't, you know, delved too deep into it. But, I mean, I think it was a statement from Steve Kerr, like, you know, if you want to, you know, put us in these types of games, you know, schedule it in a way that is going to be beneficial to everyone, you know. And I think, you know, with the new collective bargaining, you know, the game, there's going to be an extra week in the season. Hopefully those types of situations will be avoided. But it is a grind. And I think that is sort of what it pertains to. And also you can point to, you know, also San Antonio, without a bunch of their top guys too for that game. It's like, well, for you, if they're without Leonard, then we might as well rest some of our guys too. So ultimately a wash, but definitely you're right. I think not a great look for any party involved.
I agree with you completely. We broke it down, the travel schedule of going to Atlanta, to New York, to Chicago, home for a game, and then on the road to Minnesota, and the very next night going to San Antonio. All right, so with that being said, when you look at the recent struggles of Golden State and the losses that have piled up since they lost Durant, how much of a factor has been the travel schedule? Because it's rather surprising that they can't find a rhythm without Durant. You'd think that they would figure out who they are.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And but I also think it's just, you know, March in the NBA is sort of a time that, where, you know, performance can really, I think, vary. You know, and the Warriors are only a half game up on San Antonio, but I think they know that. Again, they've been a team, you know, now that they've done, and I said they set the record last year. I think they're a team that has sort of that longer view. So I think they are more focused in the playoffs. I'm not concerned about them per se, but I mean, I think there's a billion factors you can point to. It's just March is always a weird time for teams, and Golden State, I think, is not an exception, despite, you know, as talented as they are.
Yeah, just one note on that, because again, you see a lot of people wanting to latch onto this to say, ah, here it is. Here's the thing we can use to kind of attack some and showcase a vulnerability to Golden State. But in the end, when they get Durant back, this is nothing, right? What we're seeing now, we won't even remember.
Exactly. Exactly. If all goes well for them, we're not going to talk about this in 5 months or however long.
All right, on the flip side of that, let's go to San Antonio. And they do this every year. They win their 50-plus games, and they play really well. And they had the situation with LaMarcus Aldridge. He's now been cleared, and Kawhi Leonard in the concussion protocol. But overall, how do you grade this San Antonio team from the other teams that we had? Same, or are they a little better? How do you look at this year's Spurs?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's tricky without Tim Duncan to know how they'll fare in the 7-game series. But I think they're right up there. I think they've done a good job in terms of, you know, they made pretty good moves in terms of, you know, patching up some roster holes. You know, I thought their offseason was pretty solid as usual. And, you know, I think that it's tough because when you talk about, like, how are they going to finish in the playoffs, well, that really totally has to do with, more of the competition, I think, than the Spurs. You know, the Spurs are going to be right there. The Warriors have been such a tough matchup for them in the seven-game series. I don't think that problem has gone away. But I think this team is right up there. I mean, I don't think it's their best team ever, but I also think Kawhi is having one of his probably his most impressive season to date. And you've seen Aldridge kind of, you know, move into a more comfortable role this year. I think they, you know, are right there if someone slips up.
Russell Westbrook with his 33rd triple-double, and there has been a good conversation around the country about the value of triple-doubles in the MVP race. They're a little easier to get, or maybe we're overvaluing them, or how. When you look at the case that Russell Westbrook is making this year with his team the sixth seed in the West and doing it without Kevin Durant and the triple-doubles, when you evaluate an MVP case for him compared to LeBron or James Harden or Kawhi Leonard, how do you stack that up?
Yeah, well, I think it comes down to, I mean, you know, you look at the stats, you know, the every night, you know, the continual, you know, statistical dominance. And I think, you know, the through line with that is his effort every single night. Like, you know, that guy's relentless, and I think he maybe doesn't, well, he gets a lot of credit for it, you know, but we still maybe don't even really see, you know, how many superstars every single night are always just playing that hard, right? So I think that's impressive. And, you know, the team is, you know, obviously goes as he does. And, you know, personally, I think I don't have a vote, but if I did vote, I think right now Harden would be my guy. But I definitely understand the Westbrook argument, and I think just for his nightly effort and obviously statistical, you know, what he's doing is unprecedented. So I actually, this is one of the few years where I'm really curious to see what happens with the award race.
Jeremy Wu joins us, SI.com, on the NBA. All right, over in the East, Kevin Love is expected to come back, and Cleveland obviously being a top seed in that conference, and a lot of people expect them to go to the finals, and that wouldn't be a stretch. However, if, Jeremy, you're looking at the Eastern Conference and you said, look, the team that is best suited to give Cleveland a run in the playoffs because of personnel and the way they're playing and the way they play at home, for example, when you look at Boston, Toronto, the Wizards, who do you see as giving Cleveland the biggest fits in the postseason?
Sure, you know, well, you know, I was going to say Toronto, but they've had these injury issues with Lowry. I mean, I think if you can assume Lowry is at full health and they have everybody, I think Toronto is the best matchup in terms of size and, you know, lineup versatility and the also experience, you know, of those three teams. I think Boston I like, but I also think they're thin up front. It may not matter as much against a team like Cleveland. So, you know, I do like what a full-strength Boston team can do against the Cavs, just in terms of, you know, lots of perimeter defenders, you know, a big guy in Horford who's been there before. You know, I mean, you know, the Cavs are, you know, they have, you know, good rebounders and, you know, Tristan Thompson and LeBron, but they're not a team that is, you know, going to really be able to go big on you too much. So it's like, I don't think Boston should have as much trouble controlling the glass, because that's a big thing for them. So I mean, I like either of those two teams. Washington, I still am a little bit slow to fully come around on. But if, you know, if John Wall and Bradley Beal are firing on all cylinders, then, you know, they can definitely mix it up and make it interesting.
I want to talk about a team that's not in the playoffs, but is on the outside looking in, and that's the Miami Heat. They're half a game behind the final spot in the East. If they make it to the postseason after that horrific start, Jeremy, what are we talking about with this team? I mean, is Eric Spoelstra coach of the year candidate? I mean, how do you put into context what they've done since starting out bad and then really turning it on?
Oh, absolutely. I think if they make the playoffs, I think Spoelstra is a great coach of the year candidate. I mean, they really are working with spare parts for the most part, and they've turned it into a, you know, really like well-oiled machine. And you know, they're a team that's sort of better than the sum of their parts. You know, every year there's at least one or two teams that kind of, you know, get hot like this, but they have been able to sustain it for now going on 2 months, and it's really impressive. And, you know, I probably haven't watched enough of their games even, but it's awesome. You know, I feel they're happy for those guys, the franchise. But they, you know, the other thing, the subtext is that it's a case against tanking, right? It's like, you know, everyone's like, oh, you know, we suck, let's get a good pick. But, you know, the fact is that doesn't guarantee anything. And, you know, I think Spoelstra is a coach now who should get more credit for what he did, you know, with when he had all those superstars, right? You know, I mean, obviously he wasn't the only reason they won, but, you know, he did something right. And so I think, you know, he'll get some credit, and it's awesome for that organization. I hope they make the playoffs. I think it'll be a fun Cavs Heat first round. It'll be pretty fun.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. One other question I want to get. I got 60 seconds, but your thoughts on DeMarcus Cousins. It doesn't seem to be working out. He had a good night last night, but it does overall hasn't worked out in New Orleans. Is there a reason why, or are they still feeling each other out, or how do you evaluate what's happening to the Pelicans? Because they were supposed to make a push to that 8 seed.
Yeah, I think it's just an adjustment period for them. That's the short of it. Like, I think it needs to be a wait till next year situation. I think he's a player who impacts the game in such a distinctive way that it, no matter who you are, it's very hard to incorporate him. I'm not sorry about his mood swings. That's just DeMarcus, you know. So we'll see next year. Give him a little bit of time to figure it out. But I will say that, I mean, I think if this totally bottoms out, I don't know if what's going to happen with that front office. Like, I don't know if, you know, the coach or if Gentry or Demps is safe. Like, we'll see if they shake it up.
All right, Jeremy Wu, SI.com on the NBA. Really appreciate it as always, my friend. Thank you so much.
All right, take care. Thanks, man.
All right. I hope Milwaukee actually gets the eighth seed or maybe even a little higher. You know, we always talk about Giannis and his emerging superstardom in the league. And I think as he had that great All-Star game and people are kind of, you know, hearing more about him and what, you got to make the playoffs to make even a bigger, like you got to be a presence in the playoffs to make even that kind of next push up. I wouldn't mind seeing Milwaukee, see what happens there with him, especially on the next level. All right, coming up, more thoughts on the brackets as I finalize and tighten up mine. And also a movie review for me. I don't give them very often, but I did see one over the weekend I wanted to get to. That is coming up next. It's SB Nation Radio.
Get your baseball fix all season long on SB Nation Radio. Keep track of your favorite team thanks to SB Nation's team-specific sites. Team news, rumors, injury news, highlights, find all of that and much more. Just go to SBNation.com/MLB.
This is Kyle Schwarber from the Chicago Cubs, and you're listening to SB Nation Radio.
This is the Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony DeZiri.
I am actually dancing in the studio, which is a bad sight. I'm glad there's no camera on this show. I like that music, man.
Such a good song.
It's such a good song. All right, so I was telling Joe that I may be off tomorrow because we had a tree fall in our back patio, and it has to be removed. And we have to remove it like now. And so my wife called a tree company, and they may be coming at the time that I would be normally working a show or going to the show and whatnot. But now we find out it's going to be in the morning, so I don't think I'll have a problem with that. But I was telling Joe, if I was man enough, I would get out my, you know, chainsaw and just chop it up myself. No, I have to have a company come and remove this tree that fell over. It was a dead tree. It was about ready to die. The winds and snow caused it to crash down. It's not a huge tree, but I should be able to handle this. Don't you think I should be able to handle this? But I can't.
I mean, I don't think I would do it.
Get out there with a chainsaw.
I mean, it'd be fun.
Yeah, I'm supposed to, like.
But like dangerous.
I think my kid and I could move this tree though, but we have to get rid of the tree. Like it has to go. They have to chop it up. They have to take it and get rid of it. And so I have to wait. I have to get up in the morning to deal with that. But I feel whenever I hate when this happens all the time. We will call people to come fix something at our house, like plumbing, right? It'll say, oh, they got a plumbing problem. So people come. And these are experts in their field. And they will do something so easy. And I will say to myself, why do not have the level of knowledge that I could have just done that? Look, I'll hire a plumber for a big job. But when they come over and go, done. $200. I'm like, all right, should I have not somewhere along my schooling learned how to do basic house maintenance? See, I always feel terrible about this.
Yeah, see, like we have a philosophy at my house back home that we call everyone to fix things because if my dad tries to fix it, it means we're going to end up spending more money when the plumber gets there to fix the problem.
Right, right.
Because he's just going to probably make it worse. So normally that's the route we go. So no, Tony, I think you're okay. I think it's just a problem across America.
I was telling you yesterday, I went to go visit a friend of mine. Her and her husband bought a house, and they have a beautiful stone. It's just a gorgeous house. They have done so much to it. It's an old house. It's got that stone feel. It's just beautiful. And this, and so they were giving me a tour, and the guy was telling me, her husband was telling me, yeah, we took that wood piece of wood out. I put in another piece of wood. We painted this, and then we went over here and I took out this and I added that. And all I kept thinking about in my mind was, won't do it, won't do it, won't do it, won't do it. Call somebody, won't do it, won't do it. And I thought to myself, I wouldn't deserve a house like this. I would just basically buy it and hire and just say, people, come in and fix everything that I want. I don't want to even come in until it's done. I feel less of a person because of these things. I just don't do it. I just don't do it like this. I don't like painting. I hate painting. It's
brutal.
Hate it. So when my wife says, let's paint the guest room. Let's paint the family room. Let's paint the media room. I'm like, no. I call my wife the Saturday killer because this is what she does. And I go, no, hire a professional. Now I got to learn how to do this stuff. Because I feel it's not saving money. I'm willing to part with the money. It's the feeling I get when somebody has to come to my house to do something I should be able to do. Like remove a tree that's fallen on my patio and put it somewhere until the spring and then leave it on the side of the road when somebody's going to come and chop it up. But instead, tomorrow, I will watch two men come to my house and take care of this for me while I stand and go, do you think you'll have that done soon, huh? Would you like some water?
Well, to be fair, Tony, it could be a woman too.
Yeah, that's true. It could be a woman.
To be fair. I mean, come on.
I'll have some coffee ready for you people when you're done removing that big, bad, nasty tree out of my backyard.
Do you like go out of your way to make them coffee?
I do. Whenever anybody comes to my house to do something, whether it's the cable guy or maybe we have trouble with electricity or anything, anytime, I always say, can I make you a cup of coffee? Can I get you water or soda or something? Is there anything I can do to make your visit to my humble abode more enjoyable than driving out here for 2 seconds of your time?
It's very nice of you.
I try anyway. All right, I don't do this very often because I don't go to the movies very often, but I would like to give a good little movie review for a movie that I saw over the weekend. And we took our kids to see it because my wife and I actually like these kind of movies, even though they're just good old family fun. We went to go see Kong Skull Island. Now, I like the King Kong story. This where he falls in love with the girl and he gets captured and he goes to New York and he's looking for the girl and he climbs up on the Empire State Building and he shuts down and it's beauty that killed the beast. I like that. This is not that at all, but it has Samuel L. Jackson in it. And I got to think if Samuel L. Jackson's in a movie, it's got to be pretty decent. Look, this is a B movie. This is not an A+. This is not even something that's going to make you think about something or get into deep thought. If you just want to go see a bunch of monsters and people fighting monsters and Kong fighting monsters, and it's just that monster movie fun where the action keeps going, it's got a lot of booms and booms and booms throughout the whole thing, I think you're going to like Kong Skull Island. It's actually pretty decent. Again, it's just one of those things where if you like that kind of genre. I didn't like Godzilla when it came out a couple of years ago. I didn't quite like Godzilla, but I liked this. So I give it a B+. Again, it's not an A, it's not a must-see, it's not a run to the theater to kind of see it. But if you're looking for some good explosions, if you're looking for some good action, if you want to see how big King Kong actually is and how he just sort of destroys everything that's in his path, including the monsters that come out from the earth. But the underrated star of this is not Samuel L. Jackson's John C. Reilly. He's hilarious in it. There's some comedic angle to it. Brie Larson is in it. She's pretty good. So overall, Kong Skull Island, go see it.
I'm actually going to see it this weekend. It was on my bucket list. So, and I'm obviously I actually enjoyed the Godzilla movie that came out recently. And
you did,
yeah. So, and did you stick around for the post credit scene?
No, I didn't.
Oh,
is there a post? What, Kong or Godzilla?
In Kong.
No, I didn't. But I heard that. But I heard. I don't know why we didn't.
The
I
people from Godzilla are there, and it's leading to a Kong versus Godzilla movie between
the last
Godzilla and this Kong. They're gonna fight to the death.
I hope so. This Kong is actually quite there's a sympathy side to it that I won't spoil for. But anyway, go to it expecting fun. Don't go to expecting some deep thought type of thing. It's fun. That's all it is. It's fun. All right. Thanks to our guests, Jeremy Wu and Bobby Belt, Joe George producing the show. Sean Salisbury is next, SB Nation Radio.
This is SB Nation AM.
SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio, along with Sally and Murray. I'll still be Scott. It's a Thursday. Our friend Roy Wood Jr. will be here. What does his bracket look like? Speaking of, it is time to get your story straight. First four all set. Where do we go from here? It's also a Thursday. We'll do Just Asking for a Friend. All that and more on the next SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
Every morning, Lynn, Murray, and Solly get you ready for work on SB Nation Radio.